Welcome to Phantom Podcast Network. Stay tuned for trailers of upcoming specials here on the Phantom Podcast Network. The year is 1989, and there's a full contact karate event going on in Hong Kong. Only one man can take on the multiple styles of martial arts and come out victorious. He is the legendary ninja, Vince Vaughn. That's right, Vince Vaughn is back, and this time he's going full contact. Welcome to Phantom Podcast Network. This is Legal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of 1980s action cinema. Celebrating the heroes of yesterday, Schwarzenegger, Stallone, Bruce Willis, Van Damme, all the way down to, of course, the big great action films that we all enjoyed on VHS, and of course, Betamax, with the loves of American Ninja, all the way through to Cyborg Cop and beyond. Here at Phantom Podcast Network's Legal Mullet Podcast, join Adam O'Brien as we celebrate action movie cinema.
G'day, mate. How you going? This is the Legal Mullet. Adam O'Brien coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia for, of course, Phantom Podcast Network. Legal Mullet, and we'll be looking at, of course, Bloodsport tonight. And it is an action classic. And considering we just covered Warlock, we'll cover the other one, which, I watched both of those at the same night back in 1989, and both are dead set classics. You got to check it out. So tonight, joining us, we have Lee Fillingsness, co-host, of course, of Bloody Kings, Highlander podcast, where he co-hosts that with, of course, Kevin the Raider Nerd Reitzel, one of our many amazingly talented podcasters here. And also, he is one fair hand when it comes to martial arts, firearms, blades, anything when it comes to, of course, the arts of martial. Well, that's right, martial! That's right, all here. And, of course, we're going to be chatting about that and the effect that that film had on us here, right now on the Phantom Podcast Network. Here's how you can contact us here at the Lethal Mullet Podcast. You can find the show on Apple, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, and Podbean. And of course, folks, you can also find it now on iHeartRadio, the greatest place and greatest way to, of course, find podcasts. You can contact us also by subscribing at fpnet.podbean.com, on Twitter at FanPodNetwork, and on Facebook and Instagram at Fandom Podcast Network. But if you want to keep in the know when it comes to, of course, 80s action cinema and, of course, 90s and even into the 2000s with amazing, action cinema and all B-grade nonsense, you can follow me at the handle at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Make sure you check out the flagship show, Culture Clash, Blood of Kings, and all the others at the master feed at FanPod Networks, fpnet.podbean.com. Go on, check them out, folks, and we'll catch you on the web. G'day, folks. Here we are, chatting Frank Dukes' story of Bloodsport. That's right, one of the greatest classics from 1989. This is a martial arts dynamo of a movie. This is like End of the Dragon was in the 70s, but less splits then. Now there's more splits. And joining me all the way from the United States is, of course, the co-host of Blood of Kings and your dear pal when it comes to all things martial arts, and my brother in Aikido, the one, the only, Lee Fillingsness. Buddy, how are you?
You know, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm enjoying the break of the monotony of the social distancing we're doing here in Minnesota. It's kind of nice to actually talk to somebody.
Nice. You know, what great things is about this, it's giving us a chance to, I suppose stay indoors a little bit, but also review some classic movies, buddy, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And when you mentioned this one a couple of weeks ago, and as one of the ones you might be doing later, I'm like, dude, Dibs, I've got to do this movie. Oh, yeah. One of my favorites.
I mean, this is the thing that really got the Karate Craze probably came with, you know, films like Karate Kid and its sequels and stuff like that. But this film really got that sort of a bit more energized, a bit more adult. But at the same time, all as kids, we all watched this, didn't we?
Oh, totally. This was on constant play, you know, first on like the HBOs, and then once it hit TBS, USA, WGN, like all of our basic cable channels, you couldn't turn on a TV and not see this on some channel within 24 hours for probably a good 7 or 8 years. I mean, it was just, it was everywhere. Most of my friends could probably still quote this movie, at least 5 lines from it.
Oh, yeah.
This was big.
And this also, you know, obviously was such a game changer at the time. Obviously, you know, that marked the real true start for Jean-Claude Van Damme. Not his dance movie, and certainly not his No Retreat, No Surrender performance. This was him taking control, and I mean, the film was a failure when it first went out to test audiences. So it was Van Damme that really, you know, as we will say very soon in the trivia, he put this together himself when it came to editing the film, and he knew his skills, knew what he had as well. And this film has also been a clone of many times. One movie I watched last night starred Chong Li himself, of course, Bolo Yeung, and it's called Blood Fight. And it stars, of course, the one of the lead antagonists of Fist of Legend, and that is, of course, Kurata-san, Yasuaki Kurata. And Kurata's, you know, he's always been a very dominant sensei-like figure in, just like in Fist of Legend, he is the sensei in that as well, of the dojo. But he's also one of these guys who obviously can pass on knowledge and the real myth and lore of martial arts through film. And he, you know, in Blood Fight, unfortunately, it's probably not the right vehicle because it didn't quite deliver. But you get Bolo Yeung as, wait for it, folks, here's a drum roll, here we go, Chang Li. That's right, he plays Chang Li. And you can actually hear, there's even a scene that's literally a rip-off. This film came out in 1989 as well, so I have a feeling this was shot probably a couple of years before and they just waited. But there's even a scene where he kills off an opponent just like Bloodsport. So we'll talk about that one a little bit later and some of the others. And, of course, the three sequels, which were with Daniel Bernhardt, who obviously was in The Matrix Reloaded and Revolutions as one of the agents. You know, again, much taller than Van Damme and in some ways probably a bit more controlled martial artist as well. So be interesting to go through that. But before we get there, Lee, how can we find you on the web, bud?
You can catch me on Twitter and Instagram at The Way of the Way. Hit me up on The Way of the Way on Facebook, Madman Road Productions, my film company, and Double Action Martial Arts, a little school I'm trying to get off the ground.
Nice. All right, so Bloodsport came out in 1989, directed by Newt Arnold, produced by Mark DeSalle. That's a name you're going to hear on many different productions of Van Damme, folks. Screenplay by Sheldon Lettich. That's right, story by Sheldon Lettich, another one that obviously helped Van Damme a lot. And it was obviously by the Cannon Group. Now, Lee, tell us all about Cannon, mate. These films, eh? What do you reckon?
They're just the perfect blend. They're like the Doritos of movies. You know they're not good, but you love them. Like, I just don't know any better way to say it, but like, they're bad. But if Breaking 2 comes on, you will watch Turbo and Ozone, along with Kelly's Special K, take on Electro Rock, and you will just love it when Ice-T shows up in a very early cameo. You know, any one of these movies that comes up, and this one included, they do so many things wrong, but they are all so charming and so fun that you can't help but watch all of them. Like, they're, you know, they did Over the Top too, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, look, you know, this is just one of those classic film companies that, you know, if something was popular, they put it out. I mean, we're talking about the company that brought us Masters of the Universe, for crying out loud.
Yep, for what it was worth, but, yeah.
You know, and it's crazy, folks. Slight detour here. I was watching Tour of Duty the other day because I've been rewatching those three seasons. And Man at Arms turns up that as Goldman's father You know, all of a sudden I hear this, you know, he didn't have the mustache for starters. So I thought, who is this guy? And then went, oh, it's Man at Arms. I remember seeing him first because he had the KFC at the start of Man at Arms, at Masters of the Universe. He's like, this is great chicken dishes, yeah.
The my favorite thing with that movie is it was one of the first DVDs to have multiple language tracks, and me and my buddies watched it in Spanish.
Oh, wow.
And, oh, whoever they got to do, Dolph Lundgren deserves an Oscar for best everything ever. Like, it was... Wilder, ¿dónde está el qué? It was so wonderful watching that. And the only voice that stayed the same was Gwildor.
Oh, nice.
And I don't remember any of his quotes, but it was just... It was in this voice, and oh god!
I've always wondered what Christopher Walken would have been like as Gwildor.
Well, you know, he probably would have been like, "Yeah, the key to the universe is harmonics. You know, music. That's another way of communication is math."
Oh, that's ace, folks! There you go. There you go. That's absolutely ace. All right, so let's get to the premise of this classic film. Obviously, you know about the fight scenes, you know everything, but there is a bit of a plot. What little there is, it's there. So U.S. Army Captain Frank Dukes, played by Jean-Claude Van Damme, is trained in the ways of the ninja by the legendary sensei Senzo Tanaka, played by Roy Chow. And as a boy, Dukes grew up with a group of pals that broke into Tanaka's home and tried to steal the heirloom, the katana. Why a ninja has a katana? Who knows, folks? But hey, there you go. But Duke's
every he calls a Tachi a katana.
Oh, that's true. Very true. So obviously impressed by Duke's integrity and toughness, as it says here, the guide here. Basically, Senzo takes him in, and alongside him helping out his son, he said, "Well, look, okay, let's give you a shot. Let's see if we can train you as well." And obviously, you know, his son, has an ill moment of death, unfortunately. And, you know, there's a point where he's going to give up. Senzo's going to go, that's it, I've had it. And Frank then becomes, of course, the new pupil. And through diligence and training becomes a very talented Duke's Rue component of his life here. And, of course, after that, he joins the army. But there's a full contact event called the Kumite. This legendary event where, of course, they're going to be run by the Black Dragon Society. And through that, in Hong Kong, every couple of years, they have this event, full contact. Some of it fight to the death between different styles of martial arts, which, of course, Dukes is going to. But he goes absent without leave from his army position. And then two CIC officers, both Helmer, played by Norman Burton, you probably remember from a 007 outing, played Felix Leiter. And, of course, Rawlins, played by Forrest Whitaker, the awesome Forrest Whitaker, which a lot of people don't know, is actually a very skilled martial artist as well. I do believe in Kenpo. That's right, Kenpo, folks. Assigned to track down and arrest Dukes. And what it turns out is two separate storylines. We have, obviously, them chasing Dukes, and then Dukes, of course, going all the way up to Chong Li. And all that about. So that's really what it is. It's a fight film, folks, and it is a fantastic one. What do you reckon of the plot, mate?
Well, it's a little bit unlikely. You know, I mean, getting away, getting only two CIC guys coming after him for going AWOL when they know he's taking part in an illegal tournament.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a little bit crazy. The it's kind of weird trying to figure out exactly how they're liaising with the Hong Kong police. Because that would have been at that time, that would have been a joint Chinese and British action. Mm-hmm. That wouldn't have been just Chinese, because Hong Kong was still under British control. So they would have been interacting there. But, you know, as a former tournament martial artist, obviously nothing like this. You know, they kind of got a very good story of why, you know, one person does this.
Yeah.
And they really do a really good job of balancing the nice guy that Jean-Claude Van Damme is portraying with the very skilled and effective fighter that he is. And usually you kind of have somebody being forced to fight.
Yeah.
You know, a la, you know, Danny LaRusso, mm-hmm. who finds, you know, his own internal power and Or you've got somebody like Clint Eastwood, who's just made to fight, and he's, you know, kind of grizzled and world weary. But this is just in terms of what the character is like as a person, this is much more in line with, you know, most tournament martial artists, whether it was, you know, the Taekwondo, Karate, and Judo that I did for decades, or if it's, you know, even like when you meet the Gracies, you know, they are, they can, you know, fold your laundry while you're still in it, but they are very gracious and wonderful people. And that's, that little detail is something that is usually missing from these fight movies. And even the, you know, the other fighters, I mean, you've got a couple jerks in there, you know, I mean, Hossein and obviously Chun Li, but there's not a lot of animosity between them. It's like, okay, I guess I'm fighting you next, get in the ring. And, you know, really the only person that was unprofessional was Don Gibb as Jackson. And even he was true to certain characters that I've known in the real world. And honestly, other than assaulting women on the bus, I behave like that once or twice. You know, you get that much testosterone and confidence, and occasionally that does bubble to the surface.
But,
as far as the plot goes, loved it. That this took place over 3 days, and nobody really seemed to be all the worse for wear, even though they're taking all these just heavy kicks to the face. I know how tired I was after one day of tournament. I would not want to do three.
Yeah, no, it's rough, isn't it? I mean, the other characters that are interesting in this is like Ken Hsu, who plays Victor Lin. And of course, you know, he's this great character who's obviously the life of the party and obviously, you know, is a big fight promoter. But he's great in this. He really takes it on and becomes good friends with, of course, you know, Frank and Ray. And Donald Gibb, as you say, playing Ray Jackson. Donald obviously turned up in a lot of different films and TV since. Great actor himself. But I think it's, you know, having those on the side of Frank, it, to me, straight away, it was kind of like, you know, this is going to be a real buddy film.
Well, I remember when I went to Korea to fight for the first time, me and my best friend Joe realized that Victor is a real person. You know, we went there for the World Championships in Kumdo, sword fighting style, and the master that we had trained under in the States kind of arranged for people to look after us, take us around. And this would have been Master Shin with, from one of the schools in Busan, Korea. And just the kindness, the eagerness to please, you know, and everything that those guys did for us, we realized in the middle of it that Victor is a very real person in this world. He seems kind of ridiculous and funny, but it happened to me, ladies and gentlemen. This is a very real thing.
And it's great because, I mean, he's kind of like, I suppose, the eye into the world for, you know, these guys who have never been to the Kumite before. I mean, leading right up to, obviously, you know, getting their hotel room and all that sort of stuff. You know, it's a classic way of seeing the culture, and, you know, there is a bit of a culture shock there as they go into this sort of underground part of Hong Kong. But their entrance is very interesting, and we'll talk about that soon because it involves the Dim Muck. But, folks, we're going to talk about a little bit more about, of course, the cast. So Jean-Claude Van Damme, hot off the, well, success, I suppose, of working on No Retreat, No Surrender as the bad guy. He gets lands this, and he landed at the same time Black Eagle as well, which with Shokasugi. And, well, I mean, this really is his film when you think about it, isn't it, Lee?
Yeah, and as a vehicle to launch one actor, you know, that, I mean, you could probably say Jean-Claude Van Damme to just about anybody today, and you know who he is, even though he hasn't been the star of a movie that people have gone to see in the theaters, you know, other than like the weird people like me that went to see JCVD when he came out in like 2008. I mean, he hasn't been in anything that, or he hasn't been the reason that anyone goes to a movie since the 90s. You know, I mean, he was in right. Expendables 2 and, you know, did a really good job as a bad guy named Villain. But it's wonderful. But the, you know, to set up one person for just pure stardom And, you know, when you kind of look at the ensemble that's around him, you know, I mean, Forrest Whitaker, you know, had done, he was in The Color of Money before this, and he'd done Fast Times at Ridgemont High and a couple other smaller things. But, you know, a good, you know, actor, you know, character actor, Donald Gibb gave a, you know, pretty good performance. You know, Leah Ayres, who played Janice, the reporter in this, is probably the best actor in this.
Oh, yes.
And when you watch Jean-Claude Van Damme, he's very mechanical in changing moods at this point.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're really selling his skill and his look, but he's not really an actor at this point. He's acting like actor, but he's not an actor. And everyone really does their very best to support him. And it's you know, now having been in the film industry for a while, seeing that makes me wonder when my turn comes up. But it's also that you notice because, you know, if he had gone in and auditioned to act in something, he wouldn't have gotten hired for much more than, oh, let's say a background dancer in Breakin'. But with the skill set that he had, and, you know, obviously, you know, very chiseled physique, you know, good looking dude, you know, I mean, he looks good on a poster. Mm-hmm. And I think this poster probably sold more tickets than the commercials did. But, yeah. You know, it gave him that springboard to get better. And, you know, you start to see growth as an actor, as a performer through these movies. But this one is just, I'd say probably his best. Even though it's a lot of his worst work, it's still like, the ensemble. There's a lot of humility and, you know, hubris in what he does, but like it's genuine. It's not, you know, I am a big star, so I can do anything I want. And yeah, you know, my name is Chance Boudreau because my mama took one. You know, he's very humble as a character, and you can see the humility as an actor because he's doing his best to try to act off of other people. He just doesn't know how to yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's the delivery of the lines too, you know. You know, he's, I think, having a, you know, intonation, everything there is something he's still working on. Like, I'll be at the airport in 2 days. You know, like, you know, little things, little lines like that, you know. Just answer the question. You know, like, it's the way he's trying to fight with Lear in that scene and stuff like that. You know, and at the end of the day, he's...
Aren't you a little old for video games?
You know, what's interesting is, yes, he was a Shotokan, you know, champ. Look, the video footage is out there now, folks. You can see it. His former sensei has actually put the footage of him doing the same spin kicks you see right now in a kind of tournament, I suppose you could say, in Belgium. So, you know, muscles from Brussels. There you go, folks. But what's interesting is that, you know, Cannon years later, got a French champion out, and somebody that was actually a French commando, or at least in the French armed forces. And that is, of course, Olivier Grenier. And I always thought, well, here's the legit Van Damme. Like, he's the guy that's actually legitimately a Savart guy or whatever it was that he studied. Angel Town and films like that. He's another one we'll cover soon, folks, in here, because, I mean, he's... very interesting guy, particularly work on Nemesis and a few other films that he did with the director of Cyborg as well, too. So there's a lot of a crossover there. But, yeah, both I think, you know, it's funny now that, you know, people always used to say, you know, Van Damme's not legit. But he's proven himself now with a lot of that, you know, that sort of stuff that we see now coming from former senseis and stuff like that. So hats off to Van Damme for... you know, really sticking it out. Obviously, he's been a pretty big star, time of Universal Soldier, Time Cop, and Hard Target, and Nowhere to Run. But after that, yeah, he's definitely fallen down into the B-grade market.
Well, I will say, like, even just watching it yesterday, his skill, I'd say the training scenes that he has with Ray Chow really showcase just the level of control that he had with his kicks.
Yes.
And that's not something that you teach an actor... to do in, you know, a couple mm-hmm. months. You know, I mean, this is, as much as I love Matrix, none of the guys in Matrix could have done what he did without wires. You know, I mean, maybe, you know, now Keanu could, but the innate and built-in skill that Van Damme has in this movie, and very classic style movements. This was very much Shotokan, very similar to classic Taekwondo that I started in back in the 80s. And just beautiful, crisp, well-controlled kicks that go exactly where you want. And even when Chow had the blindfold on, just the skill that he had in moving with this guy that couldn't see, you know, the I've done a few blindfolded stunts, and the communications you have to have with the actor that you're working across from, there has to be, you have to know that the other person is very skilled.
Oh, yeah.
So that you can just move the way you need to move. And, you know, the trust that Ray Chow had, or Roy Chow had, in this scene, so that he could play, you know, this ninja master, you know, moving with this 200-pound, you know, man throwing really good, crisp, hard, controlled kicks. He was able to move very confidently, and that's, you know, having worked in stunts, that's not something that's easy to come by.
Not at all.
I'll give Jean-Claude plenty of props for that.
Yeah, he's great. Obviously, we've talked about Donald and we talked about Leah. Norman Burton, folks, yes, played Felix Leiter in a 007 Audi, at least once, from what I remember. But you know, he was a New York stage actor. He'd done a lot of work. I think he even worked in Planet of the Apes, I think, at one stage, too. He was in Diamonds Are Forever. So, I mean, you know, a working, jobbing actor, but he's great in this. It's kind of like the seeing CIC officer. Forrest Whitaker, folks, I mean, what can you say? Academy Award, you know, nominated. Obviously, he's worked on some great films, The Crying Game, Platoon, Ghost Dog, The Way of the Samurai. I'm sure Lee would know that film. Great film.
I love that one, yeah.
Yep.
That one made me break out my old copy of The Hagakure and reread it.
Oh, wow. And, of course, in Star Wars circles, he is Saul Guerrera, the partisan rebellious leader on Jedhar. And, of course, that's in Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. And he's actually turned up in Rebels as well, playing Saul Guerrera as well in, I think it was the final season, folks. So he's a big Star Wars fan. What a lot of people don't know is, too, that he's also a well-versed martial artist. He's black belt in Kenpo, trains in Eskrima under, now you're going to love this, folks. Here's the drum roll. Here we go. Dan Inosanto. So you know Dan. Come on, folks. You know who Dan is. That is, of course, the right-hand man to Bruce Lee back in the day with Jeet Kune Do, The Way of the Intercepting Fist. So, yeah, he's well-versed. There's actually a movie called Repo Men where he uses a lot of his Eskrima skills in alongside Jude Law, where they're basically taking implants from people that are terminally ill and repossessing them if they can't pay for them. You know, it's a great little science fiction film. Came out in about 2006 or 7, I think it was. Yeah, so go and check it out, folks. Pretty good.
I was going to say, I've actually had the opportunity to train with Guru Dan a couple times.
Oh, wow.
Dude can still kick my butt. He is very fluid. You know, he's a small guy, you know, especially compared to me. But he thinks with his fingers and toes. He does, you know, there's no interrupt between his brain and the rest of his body. And to watch him move around, you know, he does knife drills. He'll do, you know, single double stick drills. He'll do roll on the ground, you know, whatever you want. And dude is just showing, you know, I mean, there's a reason why, you know, we say words like master for these old guys. It's not age. It's, you know, dude is in declining health and physical peak, but can still kick the butt of any one person in the room, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But kind of like I say, it's like, I might be able to kick one ass, but, you know, two, three, that might might slow me down a little bit.
He's great. Obviously, Roy Chow, most people will probably remember from an Indiana Jones outing. He played one of the bad guys at the start of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, where he's basically at the table trying to do a deal with Henry Jones Jr. And, of course, it doesn't quite turn out for either of them, except that he has the upper hand when he sends, Indiana Jones on the plane with the chooks and all the farming stuff, and then they just leave him on the plane to crash into a mountain.
And they met at Cafe Obi-Wan, a nice little shout-out to Star Wars in the middle of Indiana Jones.
That's right. And you can actually see, as they head towards the plane, both George Lucas, Steven Spielberg, and, of course, Dan Aykroyd is the one that actually helps them onto the plane.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that one.
A whole bit of inbuilt trivia there. Schwann Paredes is played by Mitchell Quissey. And, of course, Mitchell is the basically the first person that we see fighting in the actual thing itself. He's, of course, a Moroccan-born Belgian actor, best known for Tong Po. And, of course, you know, he's pretty much been in almost every Van Damme film. Obviously, he studied Shotokan Karate, Muay Thai, and kickboxing. Became, I suppose, through Shotokan, must have met Jean-Claude. And it was they were both cast in Breakin, is how they got into it. So they basically both got a start through Canon Films. He's lifelong friends with him. Obviously, he played a role also in Lionheart, chasing down Van Damme's estranged character, Leon Gauthier, as he gets away and becomes part of the fight circuit in New York. Very interesting, you know, these guys have sort of been right up to about probably Time Cop and Hard Target is when he probably got other work. But, yeah, they've been friends, like, all the way through. What do you reckon?
You know, there's, you know, especially for movies like this, there's people that you just want to work with. And, you know, there are stunt guys. I actually was just talking with one today. Asked him, hey, dude, do you speak Russian? He's like, oh, I can fake it. Because I'm writing a script and I want to kind of fight a Russian because this happened in my real life. And I'm like, dude, I want to work with you. And he and I have done, I think, 3 or 4 movies together already. And in our small little independent film circuit, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, there's Lee and Scott again. But I know that, you know, we can kind of push each other a little bit further. You know, we know where the line is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just... with that like level of communication, you want to do it. And especially like, you know, if they came in together and one of them got the big bill, you know, if I got the big thing and my buddy didn't, I'd try to bring him along on everything too, you know, just like, what's it, Singing in the Rain. You know, Gene Kelly is bringing Donald O'Connor around the whole time. And that's what you do. Like, you know, that's the guy that helped get you there. You might be the first one that got recognized, but it doesn't mean that you're the only one that did the work.
Oh, 100%. Now, one of the other interesting actors in this, of course, is Philip Chan. And Philip plays the Inspector Chen, in it, who's basically the liaison for the CIC from the Chinese government. And what's interesting is that he's an actor that you see turn up in a lot of different stuff over the years. You know, he's in Double Impact as one of the bad guys. Do you remember him from that?
I do. Another classic movie, you know, with Bolo Yang. Again, you kind of want to keep the same people around you as much as you can. You know, the late, great Jeffrey... Oh, what was his name? Played the...
Jeffrey Lewis. Yeah, played Uncle...
Jeffrey Lewis, yeah.
Yeah, Uncle, what was it? God... Uncle Frankie, that's right. Hey, Frankie, what is this? It's Mahjong.
You of all people should know I would never wear black silk underpants.
I've always thought, you know, they should have a Van Damme versus Van Damme film eventually where it's the toughest of the Van Dammes. You've got Chad and Alex rock up there. You've got Leon Gauthier and you've got Chance Boudreau. Who's going to walk out alive? And I think it would have to be probably Alex.
Yeah, I'd probably say Alex.
Pretty tough. Now, what's interesting about Phillips had an interesting career. Born in Hong Kong in 25th of January 1945, and full name is Philip Chan Yan Kin. And he's done just about a bit of everything. But what's interesting about his role in this film in particular is that he worked as a Royal Hong Kong Police Police Force Police Inspector before entering the entertainment industry. So it looks like he had, yeah, quite a big background in that before he got into it. He's worked for them all through the 60s and 70s. So there you go. He's quite experienced in all that. And then you can kind of see it in the confidence he has in those scenes, don't you?
Yeah. Well, and he's, you know, that's one of the things, like, I always pick up, like, does this guy really seem like a cop or not? And he just really did seem like a cop. Forrest Whitaker, Not so much in this. I mean, it was nice. He was an amiable guy, but you didn't really see any, you didn't understand the nuance of it. And that might have been just the character, but Chan definitely had that down.
Oh, without a doubt. All right, so getting down to it, folks, we're going to talk about the production. And, of course, Sheldon Lettich, who co-wrote this film, you know, obviously got the story and the idea through an acquaintance. And the acquaintance is, of course, the well-famous Frank Dukes, you know, that you put that name around martial arts circles and it's, you know, some people will, a lot of people say there's tall tales that came out about Frank Dukes. Others will say Frank Dukes is legit. Who's right and who's wrong, who knows? But I would say it makes for good movie making. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why people still watch this movie. You know, you hear the stories that Van Damme tells about training with Dukes. And, you know, obviously Van Damme knew his stuff before he went into this, and Dukes put him through the ringer. So, you know, I mean, you will, you know, every martial artist meets somebody better. But when you meet somebody that you respect that much, it gets really hard to kind of say that this person isn't completely legit. You know, there's plenty of stuff going on about whether Frank Dukes was real or not, but there's one detail. You know, this kumite is not traditional kumite that you actually do in karate. It's literally just a diagnostic. And it's done, you fight a certain number of people, you know, occasionally you hear about people fighting 100 people. And it's sparring, it's not to the death, and it's not, but it's, you know, kind of go around, it's like, okay, now you got to fight the next guy. And one of the records that they say he holds is like he 56 knockouts in one tournament. And in a single elimination round robin style tournament like this, it would have to be in the trillions of people to get there because it just moves the groups get bigger and bigger exponentially. You couldn't have that many people fighting in 3 days.
Yeah.
But if he did a traditional classic Japanese kumite, not even the tournament, just the diagnostic that you do every so often, you know, very similar to like a Schlagermensch in Germany, he could have possibly done that. So 56 by knockout, if he had fought the 100 people that, you know, has been done before, I think there's video of Masayama having done it, mm-hmm. As well as Hohan Soken maybe. I'd have to look up, but it is conceivable in that situation where all those other 100 people are not fighting other people. If he was just fighting those 100 people, and again, this is not, you know, back alley bar brawls, this is a controlled karate tournament. It is possible. Very unlikely, but I have seen very, very crazy, people do very, very crazy things. So,
oh yeah, yeah.
And if he stacked it with 11-year-old yellow belts, it's even more possible. But you never know.
The main story you're going to find, of course, about Dukes is that he's obviously he's a martial artist, fight choreographer, and writer. Obviously, he's written a lot of books about his style, Dukes Ryu Ninjutsu. You can find it on the web as well. And, of course, the story of Bloodsport is his story. He claims to have a teacher by the name of Senzo Tanaka, and who taught him the ways. He served in the United States Marine Corps Reserve from 75 to 81, and obviously through that, you know, you get some of that sort of, I suppose, you know, the story that he had, I think, the Medal of Honor on covert missions and stuff like that. He also says that he'd worked for the CIA and other covert stuff as well. So who knows what is going on there, vice versa. But at the end of the day, he gave us the story of this film. And without Frank Dukes, we just, you know, you wouldn't have this. I think at the end of the day, regardless, Frank Dukes is a very interesting character. I love the story. I love what he's done. And to be honest, I think a lot of what's gone into other films of Van Damme, things like Lionheart, he worked on the fight choreography for that one as well. And also a very beloved film of yours and mine, Only the Strong.
Oh, God, I love it.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, you know, hats off to this guy. Like, he knows his stuff. I think the film that they fell out on was The Quest, where basically Van Damme and Dukes were sort of going to do together. And it was going to basically be a big budget version of Bloodsport, you know, Van Damme's height of his celebrity and stuff like that. But for whatever reason, they split out and, yeah, they didn't do any kind of further stuff after that too. So Duke's, you know, long disputed by other people. I don't care for that. What I care about is that he was able to give us such, you know, a rich story, you know, and also the fact that he is obviously a martial artist, you know. You look at what Van Damme's trained with him. I don't think somebody of Van Damme's level would muck around if a person wasn't legit. Don't you reckon?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you spend enough time in this world, you're going to run across a whole bunch of people that are legit, half legit, full of crap, you know, kind of talking up a big game. And every so often, you know, I'm somewhere in between there. I did my thing years and years ago, and, you know, I've been riding on that a little bit. But every so often you run across a guy that you just end up completely listening to. I've got a few masters that I train with. In various disciplines, it's like, okay, I'm just going to shut up and listen to this guy. And when you get somebody that makes you shut up and listen, you know, especially, you know, Van Damme was 26 when he made this.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get a 26-year-old to get over his own ego, shut up, listen, take you seriously. You know, there's something in there, you know, game recognized game to use a common parlance right now. But I think that there is at least a few kernels of truth to the story. You know, and to me, it doesn't matter.
Yes, I am.
You know, I was a national champion in Taekwondo the same year that many other people are national champions. You know, and we can go round and round over whether it's real, whether it's not. You know, if only UFC is real fighting, but honestly, it's a fun movie. Everybody watched it. Even if you think it's stupid, you watched it. And, you know, every kid I know tried to do the can opener kick that Van Damme was doing, and mm-hmm. you know, most of us failed. I know three people ever that didn't do it right.
Very hard to do. Now, folks, one of the interesting fighters in this, I mean, you know, you can go on about the production of the film all you like, but it's pretty much, you know, an open book there when it comes to that. But Bloodsport also had an interesting fighter by the name of Peiko, who was the Muay Thai fighter in this. Legit guy. So what's interesting about this guy is that he's also turned up in a whole heap of other ones as well. So he played Peiko in Bloodsport, Perez in Death Warrant, a detective in Predator 2, played Bolivian in Stone Cold. Another classic. We've got to do Stone Cold one day. That's an absolute classic. Jeff Wincott's mm-hmm. Open Fire. He played the Psycho. He played Spaz Diaz in Strange Days. That one of Kevin's favorites.
That was him.
Yeah,
oh, that's
him. Yeah,
I loved Strange Days.
That's right. He's also in Savage with Olivier Gruner. Really, just talking about him. He was in one of the Tarzan and the Lost City. And he's also...
Is that the one with Casper Van Dien?
I do believe it is, yes. Casper Van Dien and Steve Waddington. Folks, if you don't know who Steve Waddington is, he's the guy that burns at the stake in The Last of the Mohicans. And, of course, he's now back with Van Damme. In 2003, he did In Hell and played Victor. But what's interesting is Peiko is an actor, the legit actor, and he, you know... Producer living in Los Angeles, California, grew up internationally all over the place, and started his career in Asia, in around China, doing ninja films. So you just have a look through this guy's biography, folks, when you get a chance on IMDb. And here's somebody who's probably done more in the martial arts field than Van Damme and Dolph Lundgren combined. This is just amazing. And he's still doing Thai boxing camps in Bangkok as we speak. So hats off to Paul Atoka. That's amazing.
Well, they actually used his school in Kickboxer.
That's right, they did too, didn't they?
He parlayed that in. Like, it was his school in Bangkok that they used for part of that.
Amazing, isn't it? And you know, he's somebody, I think, you know, because he's obviously an actor as well, he's able to really pull off, you know, most of what's on there because he's already a fighter as well. Amazing. All right, folks, we're going to have to take a quick break here, and we'll be back with some trivia here on the Lethal Mullet Podcast. All All right, it's time for some trivia here, folks. We're going to be talking about Frank Dukes and, of course, the trivia on the film Bloodsport. So one of the big things is Dukes was the fight coordinator on the film with Jean-Claude Van Damme as cast. And I think one of the big things is that he worked together with Van Damme to get him in the shape he would need to do the kinds of, you know, stunts and obviously kinds of martial arts that he would need to do. But I think the big thing is a friendship was formed, wasn't it?
Yeah. And there's nothing quite like kind of having your limits pushed and realizing, you know, having somebody show you how good you can be. You know, I've got coaches that I admire to the ends of the earth, and it's, you know, I realizing it years later, it's, you know, I never saw them do what I did, but they showed me that I could. And, you know, I mean, it just takes something like that. And, you know, now as a teacher, I kind of feel the same closeness, you know, when a student gets it, you know, there's a technique, you know, a principle that they don't understand and then suddenly they do, I tell a lot of my students, like, when I'm pushing you, I'm not punishing you. It's because I believe in you a little bit more than you do. And when they kind of make that realization, it's just crazy. And, you know, I mean, you take 3 months with somebody at that level, put them through it, and then you make a movie that, you know, kind of, you know, I mean, it's, you know, here we are 30 years later still talking about it. You know, I mean, that's gonna make some bonds.
You know, it's up there with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles as far as, like, just how long this has held up. I mean, different types of films in the outset, but they've both held up for 30 years. Now, this film was one of the few films featuring scenes inside Kowloon's walled city before its destruction, and you really do get to see a lot of it because, folks, Kowloon's walled city was also home to, obviously, the underground portions of two of these, you know, little retail centres under buildings and, you know, like it's not something you usually see. To see that in this film was fantastic. The arcade game also, the Jean-Claude Van Damme and Donald Gibb play, is called Karate Champ. Who remembers that one?
I have seen this one time and it was years after this movie came out and I went to play it and, you know, it's not too easy. I got my butt kicked by the computer, and I'm a gamer, but it's a fun one.
Yeah, it certainly is. So obviously, too, one of the big inspirations for Mortal Kombat was Jean-Claude Van Damme, and of course Bloodsport itself. It is a game, obviously, that came out on both Sega platforms and Nintendo, and Johnny Cage was basically him. I mean, the whole idea was that it was going to be a gritty game based on Bloodsport in some ways. But for whatever reason, Jean-Claude Van Damme, you know, didn't go for it. Didn't go, basically let his likeness in there. So they had to change it up. But the splits are still in there. All the other moves that you know as Van Damme are in Johnny Cage, aren't they?
And as much as I love the movie, Lyndon Ashby will never be Van Damme.
Yeah,
that's how much I love the movie. I didn't even need to look up his name in there. I saw that movie so many times.
Yeah,
I love it front to back. But Lyndon Ashby just never had. He was not Jean-Claude Van Damme.
You know, when you make a movie like that, and you have the cast you had me at Tagawa. Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa is you know, worth watching anytime. Just a quick side note, folks. I watched last night White Tiger, starring, of course, the classic Wushu star, Gary Daniels. Yes, classic. And comes from, of course, the UK. And the lead bad guy in that one is, of course, Kari Hiroyuki Tagawa. And he's actually worth watching. Got halfway through it. I don't usually watch Gary Daniels movies because, I mean, he's okay. But I can only put up with so much Gary Daniels. But I got a hats off to him. Respect to him for this. It was a good movie. And the... I'm trying to think who else was in it. It'll come to me. But, folks, we're going to look at that film in one of the later episodes. Ray Jackson does not use any recognized martial art at any point in the film. Would you agree?
I agree, and I believe his fights. More than anybody else. It looks like he wants to hurt the person across from him. You know, it looks, you know, there is... you kind of, with Ray Jackson, even when he's getting his butt kicked, like, he hits hard, and he, mm-hmm. you know, he hits in a way, that just kind of shows that his character is meant to be this actual brawler. And I've seen, you know, I've seen guys go in and fight in UFC style events that actually do pretty well without any actual martial arts training. Kimbo Slice would be one of those. You ever want to see something fun? Watch Kimbo Slice training with Michael J. White.
Oh yeah, that's right.
It's just Michael J. White owns him. I mean, just boom, boom, boom. Kimbo can't even get a move in, but and Michael J. White is just being very nice about it, and he's very polite and teaching him. But you know, you in this kind of world, you're gonna get that guy that just knows how to fight, you know, and knows how to get hit and still keep fighting, and that's a big part of fights. You know, even in the tournament world, you know, there's a lot of guys that have great techniques, but as was it Tyson said, like, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It's the shock. It's the pride. Once they get that knock, you have to take it. You have to take the hit in any tournament fight or any fight period. You know, it's just part and parcel of being in the contact arts. The fighter Hussein, played by Mariano, was actually knocked out unconscious by Van Damme with an elbow to the face. And you can actually see that scene in the movie. They left it in. Interesting.
Yeah.
So Van Damme.
Well, this was, you know, kind of a thing with the Hong Kong and canon style of fight choreography. You watch this movie and everybody's getting hit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not full speed all the time, but they are getting hit. And in one of Van Damme's next movies, Cyborg, he actually took out a stuntman, guy's name is Jane Pickney, took his eye out with a kukri, which is one of the least pleasant ways to lose an eye. I watch this movie now, and there's part of me that's like, yeah, you know, when you do this, you can see the hits. You know, there's a few times where Van Damme is getting hit by Tong Po or by Chun Li,
yeah,
and you see the muscles on the other side of his body receiving the impact, and you don't get that in, you know, other types of fight choreography where you just sort of fake it and fall.
No, that's right.
But by the same token, in one of the opening fights, a guy gets kicked in the face towards his right side, but he spins and falls to his left. I never quite understood how that one worked, but, you know, it's movies.
That's right. Charles Wang, the late president of Salon Films, who supplied equipment and all the props for the film, plays the Chinese doctor who takes care of Jackson in hospital that argues with Van Damme. In the tournament scenes, Jean-Claude Van Damme is seen trading kicks when fighting a guy in a grey karate suit with long hair. The fighter is veteran Hong Kong stunt performer and top martial artist Yu Shuwu. He was told to tone down his kicking skills to make Van Damme look better on screen. I do remember that guy. Yeah, he's kind of like that, the long hair, and he's got red belt and grey kung fu gi.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's quite good, actually.
And this is the kind of thing that happens, you know, when you're not the hero in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to be good enough that there's threat to him, but if he can kick his butt, you know, it doesn't matter because you're not supposed to. You're supposed to lose. And a good stuntman is the guy that can look dangerous to the hero,
yeah,
and still get beaten by him.
That's right.
And that is a very difficult way to communicate between actors, especially if, you know, I don't know any former fighters or stuntmen that have ego, but that's a pretty common story.
Yeah. Oh, there's definitely, there's that warrior creed, isn't there? You know, everyone has, honor, but also thought for their other fighters that are with them, their fellow fighters. Now, here's an interesting one, is the Dim Mak is performed in the movie is actually not the Dim Mak. This is, of course, the brick-breaking scene, which is, it kind of, how you can get those two mixed up, I have no idea. But obviously, it was popularized in the 1960s and 70s by Count Dante and the Black Dragon Fighting Society. Obviously, you remember those old martial arts magazines and comic books, and they would have this Count Dante and learn the ways of the Black Dragon Fighting Society, which was kind of like a fake ninja thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, and you'd still see this, you know, I mean, you'd still see the ads in Black Belt Magazine and the 80s and 90s when I was reading it, and people still bought it, you know, because obviously they were still paying for ad space. But you know, there is some, you know, obviously, you know, pressure points do work. They teach into police. I have been quite confused when pressure points have worked on me in ways that I didn't enjoy. But the Dim Mock itself, one of those great things you can tell people you know, and they don't want you to prove it because you'd kill them. But, you know, so unless you actually kill somebody with this, you don't know if it works. And all the weird stuff, I've never met anyone I believe knows that it didn't mock. But mm-hmm. I know a whole lot of people that can cause damage.
That's right. Both Roy Chow and Bolo Jung were in Enter the Dragon, playing pretty much the same roles, one of a mentor and one of, obviously, the secret martial arts tournament opponent. According to Frank Dukes, the character played by Donald Gibb was based on an ex-biker and jiu-jitsu practitioner by the name of Richard Robinson. So it'd be one to check out, see what this the guy's up to.
Yeah.
This is Jean-Claude Van Damme's favourite film that he has done. He only cites this as his favourite. Bolo Jung's character is actually in the film from South Korea, which is why he's got the flag and all that stuff in it too.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here we go. Here's an interesting one. The official commands, Junbi, Haji, and Hajime, that start each bout in the Kumite are Japanese. Junbi translates most closely as prepare. Well, Hajime means begin. Loosely translated, the three words mean ready, set, go. Oh, they're cutting off Hajime to Haji. That's right. That makes sense.
And Junbi, I'll need to look that up, but I'm pretty sure that's actually Korean.
Yeah, that can't be Japanese because they wouldn't. They always have the vowel after the consonant, so it would be Junabi or something like that.
Yeah, or you would end with an N, but Junbi is, you know, I never heard that in karate, and always heard it in Taekwondo, Hapkido, Kumdo.
Mm-hmm.
I've never heard it in the Japanese martial art.
Too true. In the beginning, young Frank is wearing a San Francisco Giants hat and a New York Giants shirt. Must be a Giants fan for a sports mistake. That's true.
Yeah.
Yep.
He just likes really big people.
obviously, as we mentioned earlier, Inspector Chen, the actor, plays also Raymond Zhang, the triad boss in Double Impact. The film is set in Hong Kong. The real Frank Dukes claims the Kumite he took in was at the Bahamas. And, you know, again, it says here, none of Dukes' claims of his past military history or secret martial arts tournaments have ever been substantiated. So, interesting. Jackson, Dukes, Hussein, and Chong Li are the only Kumite fighters with dialogue. And I'm pretty sure most of that was done in, what do they call it, the dialogue when they've done it after the movie.
ADR?
ADR, yeah. Because there's some there. There's no way Hossein's is the same there. And same with Chong Li. That was, you are next. You know, when he does that, you know, it's obviously not.
especially like when you hear him speak in other movies, he's got a very different voice.
So check this out. Donald Trump watched this movie on a flight by having his son skip through the boring scenes of dialogue and exposition only to watch the fight scenes. He lists it among his favorite top 10 films.
Well, if you need to skip through the dialogue in this movie, you really don't have much.
There's not much left there.
I think about 12 minutes total of dialogue.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll leave that there, but that doesn't say too much for him.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. So, folks, absolute classic. Some of the best fights, I think, are obviously Van Damme and Pako. Chong Li fight's always good. I think it's a bit of a cheated fight here and there. But this is not ninjutsu. This is not ninjutsu. This is Shotokan karate. Am I right?
Yeah, but Van Damme certainly is. But what they had Ray Chow doing was very similar to like Inton and Inpo.
Yes.
When he's moving. And what Ray Chow does is never what Van Damme is doing. So it's like two completely different styles, one that's being taught and one that's being done.
Oh, 100%.
So I don't know what was going on with that, but he was doing, you know, some introductory level ninjutsu in that, but Van Damme never did anything. This is pure classic Shotokan or Taekwondo at this point.
It sure is. So, folks, you know, I personally think this is, as Van Damme says, I agree, it's probably his best film. His second only to this is probably Probably Hard Target, actually. I think Hard Target's another one that really does showcase his films in more of an A-grade area. I mean, it's still hard to believe that we got those big movies in the cinemas at the time. It's huge. But what do you reckon, mate? Is this Van Damme's, best film?
No, I think it's everybody's favorite. And I think, you know, it's kind of like I tell people, like, if I hadn't seen Pulp Fiction first,
uh-huh.
Inglourious Basterds would be my favorite Tarantino movie. But with this one, I think Double Impact and Hard Target, in terms of like just technical everything,
uh-huh.
are better movies, even Time Cop.
Yeah.
But there's something so genuine about this movie. The things that they get wrong, the acting is horrible.
Oh, yeah.
But you love watching it. You know, like it's almost it's not even schadenfreude. It's like, good for you. You know, you're really rooting for Van Damme as the young actor uh-huh. trying to, you know, get his first big hit. You're really rooting for Frank Dukes, who we shouldn't like any more than any other fighter in this, you know, except maybe Chun Li because he's sort of a jerk in this. But there are so many things that are not good that are made up for by just how genuine it is, how hard everyone is trying. There are better Van Damme movies, but I don't know that I like one more.
Yeah,
is what I'm gonna say about this one.
I have to agree that it's his first sort of foray, so we're gonna give him that. But I like it, I love it, I enjoy it, and at the end of the day, it's one of the better fight films out there. It's got many sequels, folks, but enjoy them at your own will.
Not recommend them.
Yeah, no. Same. Look, I'll rewatch them soon. There's some great actors in there. Obviously, you get to see Gimli from Lord of the Rings in there, or Sulla, obviously from Indiana Jones. Mm-hmm. You get to see also Mr. Miyagi turn up in a few of those as well too. So. Enjoy them for what they are. Daniel Bernhardt's a perfectly good martial artist, but he doesn't have the charisma of Van Damme. But saying that, it is part of the franchise, direct-to-video. So, but before we wrap, Lee, your last words on this film.
You know, go out, watch it. Enjoy it for just fun. It never takes itself too seriously. And don't ask too many questions, like, why did that temple just say to this random French American dude, sure, you can take your shirt off and do splits on our altar over there, that's just fine.
And a huge thanks to you for being on the show tonight, mate, and
hey, thanks for having me on, man. Always a pleasure.
And folks, go and check out Blood of Kings. I've been telling you all, go and check out Blood of Kings. It is a fantastic show. And, you'll not only hear about the TV show of Highlander, but you'll hear about, obviously, the movies, the books, the franchise as a whole, and hopefully the new ones, wherever that's going to take us, whenever they turn up, whenever they get around to it, and hopefully.
We're waiting, Chad. I'd make a great Kurgan, is all I'm saying.
And it's a...
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to our other awesome shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, a weekly pop culture podcast. For you movie fans, we have Couch Potato Theater, where we celebrate our favorite cult classic and guilty pleasure movies. We also have Time Warp. That's our fandom flashback show, where we like to look back on our favorite fandoms. For you NFL fans, we have the End Zone podcast. And of course, for you Alfred Hitchcock fans, please check out Good Evening. For you Star Trek and Orville fans, we also have the Union Federation podcast. And for you hard rock metal fans, we have Hair Metal, the 1980s rock metal podcast. Doctor Who fans, we've got one for you as well. We have Type 40, our Doctor Who podcast. If you're a fan of 1980s action films, please check out Lethal Mullet. And our newest show, we have a Star Wars podcast called What a Piece of Junk. You can enjoy all of these great Fandom Podcast Network shows on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The FPNet can also be found on the Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network can also be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Please search on Facebook for Fandom Podcast Network. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We are also on Instagram and Twitter under Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.